Hello and welcome to Phoenix Cinema Podcast. I am Chris Austin.
And I'm Luke Parker.
And this is a podcast where we discuss what's showing at the historic Phoenix Cinema in North London. And this week, we're discussing the new film by British filmmaker Sir Steve McQueen, Blitz. You want to take us away, Luke?
For sure. As the Nazi bombing campaign against British towns and cities intensifies, East Londoner and factory worker Rita, played by Saoirse Ronan, reluctantly evacuates her only son George to the safety of the English countryside. But defiant and hurt, George absconds en route, embarking on a long and painfully meandering journey back to the comfort of Stepney Green and his mum. Along the way, the array of characters we meet provoke conversations and questions about identity and prejudice in war-era Britain, and we see George thrown into the dangers of a city ravaged by conflict, filled with people both ignorant and desperate to survive. All the while, Mum Rita continues to cope with the struggles of past traumas, the persistent anxiety of nighttime raids, and now the heartbreaking separation from her boy. So, Chris, what did you think about this one?
Well, that was that was a great summary. So I I saw you yesterday.
Yeah.
And you told me
I might have teased you with my feelings.
Yes. A little bit. Yeah, you told me your initial reaction, which was interesting. So I'll begin with I'll just tell you mine. I watched it today and I really enjoyed it.
What? That surprises me, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Seriously?
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Tell me more. Why?
I just thought I really enjoyed it because it's such good filmmaking. I just thought it was really good filmmaking. The cinematography was great. It's just a really pretty film to look at.
I disagree with that. There's some good sequences and like the way that they're shot, but the film is actually quite ugly. Like the color scale of it. The coloring of it just looks really worn, and like I appreciate that's the, you know, it's wartime Britain, that's what they're going for, but I don't think it looks good.
That's so interesting.
I do understand where you're coming from at the same time.
I mean, so what did you watch it on? Out of curiosity.
Just on a big TV.
Oh, okay. Yeah, same. Yeah, I don't know. I was just like, wow, this looks so good. That's so interesting. Yeah,
I thought it looked quite bland. I mean, in terms of like cinematography and like some of the sequences, I agree. It was pretty great in that respect. But yeah, I thought it was quite ugly.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, even visually, so, and I'm still coughing. Jesus, when is that going to stop? But even visually, you know, whatever differences we have there, setting that aside, I thought it was a really good story. I enjoyed the story a lot. I didn't really know where it was going to go. It really did just kind of get me thinking a lot about the Blitz. And, you know, it's just hard to believe that this was a part of life in Britain not too long ago, and how traumatic that must have been. I mean, it's insane when you think about our history, and again, the very recent history of what it was like in wartime Britain, which, you know, someone like myself and you, we've got no idea about what that was like. So it really just got me thinking about that and just how crazy that whole just how life was then. You know, it's so scary. It's so when those sirens go, I mean, just the fear and I had no idea that using the underground was such a something that, you know, the public really had to battle for, because all the underground shelters can just fill up, and if they're full, you get turned away, and if you're in the streets, you're in the streets. That's insane.
I mean, I thought that as well, but then I guess the film shows you the danger associated with that towards the end, because there was a pretty intense sequence towards the end.
Right.
Where we kind of see the associated risk with using like the tube as a shelter.
Yeah, when it so starts
it's
kind of, to...
It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because you'd think, that's obvious, like, it's literally there for you. Always seems ridiculous that they weren't using them, but yeah.
So when it starts, when it can flood.
Yeah.
Yeah, funnily enough, it reminds me of, did you ever go to Universal Studios in...
I haven't, no.
...in Florida? Oh, man, we should go, because that is such an experience. But I remember I went as a kid, and there was a ride called Earthquake. And from my recollection, you board like a subway, a train.
Yeah.
In a subway station, and you go to the next stop. It takes you through a tunnel, and then you arrive at a station called Earthquake, and then an earthquake happens. And I just remember the pyrotechnics and like water like spraying through the cracks in the walls, and you feel the train like...
Oh, it sounds kind of cool.
It was so cool, man. so yeah, okay. So what were your feelings on like the narrative parts of this film? Because I can kind of see where there were some strains.
Yeah. For me, it's almost as if the film's trying to be too many things at once.
Hmm.
And that makes it feel way too messy. You know, you've got this almost trying to be this big, loud war film with all these quite dramatic, intense sequences. And then it's also got this mother and son relationship element to the film, which I think is good, you know, and those two elements are quite easy to tie together.
Mm-hmm.
But then it starts with, you know, George, when he meets that policeman and he starts like questioning about his identity
FA or something. Yeah.
Yeah, FA and like, and where it becomes a bit more like social commentary kind of thing.
Right.
I'm not saying that like that was bad, because I think it does do that quite well. The problem is that it's trying to fit too much in, and it feels really bloated, I think, and really messy. That's definitely my biggest gripe with the film. And even just like the straight up story itself doesn't really warrant enough tension for me, because at no point did I really doubt that, you know, spoiler alert, that he's going to make it back to his mom.
That's interesting.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Especially once he like gets back into London, because you know, he jumps off this train, and like, for me initially I was like, bloody hell, he's got to walk probably like a few days to get back to London now.
Right.
And like, how's he going to survive? Like, but he gets back to London relatively easily. And then I just kind of think, it can't be that hard for you to just get back to Stepney Green.
Like, yeah.
Considering that he's literally on a bus. He's literally asked someone where to go, and he can just ask someone else, you know?
Yeah. That's really true. Yeah. I mean, like, geographically.
Yeah.
It's so true, because from the trailers, whenever I saw the trailer, the actor, I think his name is Benjamin Clementine, who plays Ife,
mm-hmm.
there's this line from the trailer, right, where he's sitting in front of him, in front of his desk, and he just says, "How did you get here?" And for the life of me, I could have sworn that watching the trailers that was an American accent.
Ah, okay.
And so I really thought this kid was being flung far and wide and then has to make his journey home. But it's literally, it does play out.
Your home's literally like 2 miles down the road. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I actually can't remember the name, but there's one character in this film who does nothing. And when I say nothing, I mean literally nothing. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand the purpose. And I think I know what I'm talking about.
You're talking about the character played by Harris Dickinson?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
He's almost like hinted as this romantic interest to Rita.
Mm-hmm.
But he does nothing. He literally does nothing. He helps her find George for like a couple of scenes, and that's it.
Yes.
It's so odd to me.
It is odd. That is very odd. I'm glad you brought that up, because Harris Dickinson is now the next big thing, and you're going to see him everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I expected his role to be way more significant than it actually is. And exactly to what you're saying, they set him up in the movie to be something, and definitely a love interest, because Saoirse Ronan's character's her partner, the father of George, is out of the picture. And he even steps up for the women in the pub at one point, you know, positioning himself to be this savior type character. And then he helps look for George later mm-hmm. in the movie. Now, when George is having troubles in an underground station, at one point they separate and he says, listen, I have to, I have to go back to my position at the station. I'll catch up with you. And you're like, okay, here we go. Nope. In fact, I don't think we ever see him again. Very weird. I do wonder, did he have a more significant role? Was that cut down? I really, that's quite confusing.
Yeah. I mean, there's another part of the film I didn't really like, and that was the whole sort of section with Stephen Graham and his gang.
Oh, okay.
I didn't like that because it's just, again, it felt massively out of place and almost ridiculous, you know, especially the characters within this gang. They just felt like such comically exaggerated EastEnders, you know. It just didn't fit the tone of the film for me at all. I don't know how you felt about that.
But. Yeah, do you know what? I completely get where you're coming from. And it does feel, and now I'm understanding what you mean by it feels like it's bloated and there's trying to do too much. Mm-hmm. Because you could actually devote half the movie or the majority of the movie to just his time with this gang. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Yeah.
However, I enjoyed it. It is very slight. It is literally... This movie is like, here are all the little touchstones along the way of the adventures or the peril or the trouble that George is going to get into. And this is just one of those things. And unfortunately, in a 2-hour movie, they can only dedicate maybe 10 minutes because he has to go through, he has to literally go from A to Z. Mm-hmm. So I completely get that. However, I enjoyed them purely because I enjoy Stephen Graham. And in a film full of, I wouldn't say questionable performances, maybe there are some questionable child performances. he is, Saoirse Ronan, great in everything, but then you put an actor like Stephen Graham in it and he's always, always great. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed watching him. And I did like the like bait and switch of how he ends up with the gang, you know, from what seems like something, mm-hmm. the kindness of a stranger, you know, and how that completely turns on it. I thought, oh, I didn't see that coming, but I didn't mind it. Suffice to say, I didn't mind it, but we do move on very quickly and I could have spent way more time.
Yeah, I guess they're my main issues with the film. I mean, Saoirse Ronan carries it, in my opinion. I mean, obviously,
for sure,
she's great. She's never not great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yet another instance of us talking about the same actor so soon. That's happened a few times on the podcast this year. But yeah, she's definitely having her moment, deservedly so.
Mm. But like the film does a really good job of painting this picture of London during the war. Like I said, with that, you know, ongoing anxiety of these raids and, you know, the heart sinking to your stomach feeling when you hear those sirens go off, and it does paint a very vivid picture. The issues that I have with the film are all really based on the plot and how it unfolds and how it kind of zigzags way too quickly and to get somewhere that I never really felt he wouldn't get to. if that makes
Understood.
Sense.
Understood. No, that makes a lot of sense. That does make a lot of sense. And essentially, the film is just divided into two separate narratives. And we bounce back and forth between Saoirse Ronan's character and what's happening with George. And then even mixed in between that, you're getting flashbacks randomly. And so just to understand, you felt like those two didn't quite mesh, or did you feel one was more stronger than the other?
Yeah, definitely the time we spent with Rita.
That's her character's name, Rita,
yeah.
Yes.
Especially like with her time in the factory, working in the factory, you know, she does that little song for the BBC.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really nice. And like I said, it's a great portrait of wartime London. And especially because she's such a goddamn good actress.
Mm.
She's just so good at showing all those emotions and those fears, all those anxieties. And she's just always a pleasure to watch. Whereas with George's character, obviously his acting wasn't amazing, and his storyline is what for me struggled with, being way like bouncing around way too much and not really any tension.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Saoirse Ronan, it was just more about her character and the emotions, and there wasn't really much of a story for her, but still her side of the film was stronger for me. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I basically agree with you in that, yes, any section of a movie or anything where Saoirse Ronan is the focus is always maybe going to be the strongest element of a movie, because she's excellent. And I do feel like, even in, how do I put this, trying force, not exactly the most ideal circumstances, maybe not even the most ideal movie, she can still make it work.
yeah.
And where maybe other actors would struggle, she can bring this level of authenticity and vulnerability and emotion to it. I just go, you're so good. And yeah, when it came to, sorry, the character of George, played by, I think his name's Elliot Heffernan. I don't know how old he is. And there is definitely an element of, okay, I'm going to give this kid the benefit of the doubt because he's a child. And it, you know, can't be easy. However, I feel like we spoke about this very recently, actually, with the Chronicles of Narnia in our film club, I was like, why are these child performances so terrible? You know, yes, they're children, but at the end of the day, that's not really an excuse, because we've seen amazing child performances. Yeah. Yes.
Totally agree with that.
It was very it was very dependent, his section, on what happens and the filmmaking and how thrilling or not you find, or how moving or not you find his story. There were definitely moments. I do think that line that he says to Ife, there's this one line where he says, "I am black." And I thought that was quite a powerful moment.
Yeah.
The way the actor who plays Ife took that in, and it's all in physical acting. And I thought that was really lovely. And I think it's really interesting how it's a story of a mixed race child. And that definitely feels like a way into the story for McQueen, who is a black filmmaker and always centers his stories primarily around black characters and culture. And what you said earlier, you said social commentary. That's what Steve McQueen does, right? It's social commentary, and he does it so well. And so I'm not surprised, you know, that he is, maybe you can say he's shoehorning it in sometimes, but I'm not surprised that it's there. And it did, you know, it's such an interesting thing. It made me think about myself, because I am mixed race. And did you know that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because not many people do. Not many people do. You know, I'm half, so half Portuguese. My mother is side of the family. They're white Europeans. And my father's side of the family are Guyanese. South America, but however, the culture is a Caribbean culture.
Yeah, yeah.
And so my father was like a brown man, but he identifies as a black man. And it's such an interesting thing because people wouldn't know that looking at me. I keep my hair shaved, basically. If I grew it out, I think they call it a bifro, where it's not quite an afro, but it's like, very thick, very, very thick, very curly. So it grows up and out. And it changes my look for sure. I mean, I'd have to get new headshots if I did that. But yeah, it's one of those interesting things because George in this movie is being raised by a white family, white English family. He's got a grandfather and a mother who are white, and he's getting this racist abuse because he's obviously got color in him. Mm-hmm. And exactly to what you said earlier, Luke, when you talk about how this movie touches on identity, identity is a very strong topic for me. What's my identity? Because let me tell you this, no fucking casting directors know what my identity is. They don't know what to do with me. So it's interesting because I can't identify as being, it's hard for me to say I'm mixed race because I feel like I can't identify with that of a black man.
Yeah.
In the UK, let's say, growing up, I don't experience the prejudice, you know, the struggles of having skin color of that sense. People who don't know me probably wouldn't know. You know, maybe some people can guess, but you wouldn't know. I remember a friend of mine was writing, you know, he wrote a play. I was in this play, and one of the lines, I can't remember what it was, but my character was railing on about the lack of work as an actor. And I think the line was something like, as a black man. And I remember saying to Will, my friend, I said, can't say that, man. And he was like, why? Let's have a discussion about it. And I said, I can't say that because I feel like if I say that, that's wrong, you know? And yet there is a, you know, my culture is definitely mixed, right? You know, there's a Guyanese culture to my upbringing. So yeah, really, really interesting. And hey, you know, McQueen's a filmmaker I'd love to work with one day. I feel like maybe we'd have a lot in common, you know, culturally, you know, our backgrounds. But yeah, again, super interesting having that be the entry point.
I think the issue I had with that element of the film is, so I saw someone refer to this film as BAFTA bait, and I'm like, that is so true. That is 100% what this film is. And because of that, it makes that like social commentary identity element to the film almost seem a bit more ingenuine and a bit more forced. Because it's not very subtle at all. It's incredibly on the nose. Not that it has to be subtle.
It is.
But yeah, it's just for me, it didn't feel presented as well as I've seen it in other films, because I think, like I said, the nature of the film does feel very like awards baity. It does make that feel a bit more ingenuine, in my opinion.
I know what you mean. Because there is that scene, there are moments or scenes that feel forced. Mm-hmm. And there's that scene where Marcus, so George's father, in a flashback, is racially attacked one night. And I'm with you. That whole scene, I didn't buy it. It felt like a scene that was forcibly inserted into the narrative as a political point of view.
Yeah, that's actually the main scene I was thinking of. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So do I believe that moments like this were happening? 100% they were.
Yeah.
But I didn't buy it happening in the purposes of this story at that point. It felt, maybe there's, because there's a gloss to the movie, you know, there's something really pretty about the production, how handsome the budget is of this film. And when something is very lavishly produced, you feel the Hollywood studio force of it all, in a way, or shall I say the Apple TV force of it all. And Yeah, sometimes that's an interesting thing too.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally get what you mean. I totally get what you mean. And to, you know, speaking about how big the score the budget is, Zimmer is scoring the film. And what did you think about the score for it?
Pretty unremarkable. I didn't, if I'm honest. There's no, well, for example, there's no point during the film where I was like, oh, that's good. Or, you know, usually you'd make like some sort of mental note when there's something that like really resonates with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have that at all, to be honest. Like the score just happened and went by and the film was done.
Fair enough. I mean, we love Zimmo. You know, we've gone to a few of his concerts. We're going to another of his concert end of next year. I thought it was nice and understated for him. It's not so bombastic. When you think of Zimmer's music, it's always bombastic, right? It's big.
That's, even though I love Zimmer, like I do understand that a lot of his film scores are quite samey. You know, these big, heavy ostinato strings and bassy sounds. You know? Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's not to discredit him because I think he's great. I think he's a genius. But this film definitely doesn't go down that alley, which is good for him.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I actually did notice Zimmer a couple of times. And he does this really lovely thing where he melds the sounds of what's happening within a scene into the score itself. I think there's a moment where you see a montage of these women working in the factory making munitions, I believe?
Yeah.
And they're scrubbing away and you just hear the machinery sort of clanking around them. And then all of a sudden, the score takes on its own rhythm and you realize, hang on a minute, the backdrop of the score the whole time was the rhythms of the factory at work. And I thought that was pretty cool, yeah. And then he does the same thing again when we cut to George on the train, right before he jumps off the train.
Mm-hmm.
You hear the score is taking on the sound of a train. It's almost like the wheels and the track that's becomes part of the. And I thought, oh, that's
I didn't even notice that.
Which maybe is testament to. Again, how understated Zimmer's work is in it. But you know, when you go into a movie knowing that Zimmer's done the score for it, it does give you an added extra bit of excitement. You know, my ears are more perked up than usual. Well, I mean, I can't believe we've spoken so much about this movie already, and it feels like our time is basically up. I will say one more thing as well. Hayley Squires really stood out to me. She was one of the women in the factory. She's got the black hair.
Oh, yeah.
She's the one telling her friend to draw the pencil line further up for her. Mm-hmm. She stood out to me so much because she's not got a massive role in this movie. I know of this actress. I think I saw her on stage once. And she was brilliant because I thought she was utterly believable. She's not got a big role. It's a supporting performance. Her job is to support. And every time I looked at her on screen, I was like, I absolutely buy you. You are so effortlessly natural in everything that you're doing. Honestly, I'm like, for me, that was my favorite performance in the film.
That's very fair. I mean, I know I mentioned it with Stephen Graham, but this film is pretty full of, not in like a negative way, but like quite exaggerated and like stereotypical kind of performances or characters, what you'd expect from this era. I'm not saying like that's a bad thing, but that's just how it is.
Mm-hmm.
But hers didn't really feel like that at all, even though her character had quite a big personality. I totally agree that she was very, very believable. Yeah,
100%, 100%. So, and actually, maybe it's because everything feels a bit more heightened than I would like that these kinds of performances stood out. Hayley Squires, Stephen Graham, of course, Saoirse Ronan. And lastly, I guess I'll say, so one thing that annoyed me is that, and it's nothing to do with the movie itself, it's to do with streaming platforms. I hate, because I watched it on Apple TV.
Mm-hmm. Was there no, there was no like distribution lag between being in cinema and on streaming?
I mean, yeah, did it have a week? Did it get a week's play? Because I think if I'm not mistaken, a week's theatrical run qualifies you to be an Oscar contender.
Okay.
I think you have to play for 1 week. I can see Luke going, yeah, well, there you go. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it was a week or two and then boom, straight on Apple TV. It's like, whoa. One thing that really annoyed me at the end of the movie is the movie's over, the credits begin, and on these streaming platforms, they push the credits to the tiny screen in the bottom corner of your screen, and they're basically like, okay, great, that's over. What would you like to watch next? And it's like, can we just...
something else down your throat right now.
Yeah. Can we just sit and watch the names of the talented people involved in making this fucking movie, please?
And even just, like, let it sit. You know, for example, we went to we went to see Anora yesterday.
Right.
In London, and as soon as that finished, I appreciate that film had a bit more of, like, an impactful ending.
But sure.
We were all just sat there for like a few minutes, just letting
almost
the film sink
dumbfounded.
In.
Yeah. And the great choice about the ending of Anora is it is a silent ending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you have to sit in silence to the point where I was desperate for the toilet. So I stood up and I almost felt disrespectful standing up and leaving. It was like I was in church.
Yeah. But I totally get what you were saying with this. It was like, cool, this one's done. On to the next thing.
Yeah.
No time to really let it linger.
I completely get this tension between filmmakers and these streaming platforms. I read recently that Wolfs, did you watch Wolfs that premiered on Apple TV? And neither did I. I'd like to. George Clooney, Brad Pitt, what's not to love about that? However, the filmmaker just came out, you know, there was news that Apple TV have cancelled the sequel to Wolfs. And the filmmaker came out and said, actually, no, Apple TV didn't cancel shit. I chose not to move forward with it because I do not trust Apple TV creatively.
Oh, interesting.
And I was like, ooh, you know, so it's, you know, I guess it's little things like this that I can see. If I made this movie, if I made Blitz, I'd be fucking furious how quickly you sideline the credits. Yeah.
I just want to say as well, like, if Saoirse Ronan is going to get Oscar love this year, it better not be from this movie, and it better be from The Outro, which I really hope it will.
I have a feeling it's going to be The Outro.
Yeah.
I have a feeling, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's jump on to pairings. Cool. Do you know what? I'm going to start because I've got two.
Okay, all right.
Now, the first one is almost like a joke pairing, but it's also not at the same time. And it is The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, The Witch, and The Wardrobe. Yes, it's a joke pairing because side by side, how can you do that, right? But
I see it.
Do you see it? Okay, yeah. Great. There was a shot at the big, and we watched The Chronicles of Narnia recently in our film club, which is why it's fresh in my head. The shot at the beginning of that movie where you see the bomber planes, the shadows of them just flying over the streets of London, the shadows of the planes. And I thought, for me, that was my favorite shot in the entire movie. It was
lovely. That's the very first shot of the film, isn't it?
It's like that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like the second or third shot of the movie. You know, so obviously taking place in the Blitz, and then pair that with the questionable child performances. And I was like, you know what? It's really reminding me a lot of that film. So that's like that's what was in my head. However, I would also pair this movie with a movie called Sin Nombre. Sin Nombre.
Never heard of it.
Highly recommend it. 2009. It's a movie about a Honduran woman trying to flee her country and try and enter the US, trying to cross the border. And the majority of the film actually takes place, I believe, on a train. And so much of Blitz is is about trains. You know, he's put onto a train. He jumps off of a train. He jumps back onto a train. They're trying to hide out in the London Underground. So there's a lot of trains play a major element of this film in terms of transport. And it's a fantastic movie, man. I watched it in New York. I saw a screening with a Q&A with the filmmaker afterwards. The filmmaker is Cary Fukunaga, who directed No Time to Die, the very last Bond film, for instance, as well as all of True Detective season one. So he's an amazing filmmaker who I really admire. And this was, I think, one of his first or second films. You know, this was like his breakout film. It's all in Spanish. And it is, she meets up with this gangster along the way who's trying to do the same thing and flee a bad situation. And it is superb. Luke, I think you'd love this film.
That sounds very cool. I'll definitely have to check that one out.
Yes.
Nice. Mine's was actually quite an easy one this week. So I think there's a film that I've watched quite a lot growing up, and it was, I actually think I watched it in school once when we were like studying, you know, like the evacuation of the children from the cities during the war. And then it was like one of these films that was always on ITV2 on a Sunday afternoon, something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's called Goodnight, Mr. Tom.
Oh, I remember I had to read the book about
it's based on the book. Yeah, yeah. I thought obviously the link is really obvious. You know, it's about this boy who's evacuated to the countryside, and he has like a really tumultuous relationship with the guy he's supposed to be staying with, but then they developed this bond, and it's a very emotional film because I remember so vividly some scenes towards the end, even though it's years and years ago since I've seen this film. Basically, he goes back to London, but his mum is basically like neglecting him and abusing him. And then you have the guy who he stayed with in the countryside basically comes back to basically rescue him. And it's a really beautiful film about, you know, the relationship between this young boy and this old man who like come from really, really different backgrounds, different, really literally polar opposite parts of the country. I mean, in terms of like the filmmaking or anything, I'm sure it's nothing amazing, but in terms of a film about something similar that really left an impact on me, I think it was an easy pick.
That's amazing. Is that the TV movie from 1998?
It is that one. Yeah.
You know what, Luke? Honestly, this is why you're on this podcast. What an incredible, the fact that your mind even went there. And yeah, I had to, as part of the curriculum, the education, I had to read this book. I remember the teacher would choose who goes next in reading out loud. I remember reading this book out loud. What an amazing pick. I can't say I've ever seen this.
Your thing is, I have a feeling you probably have. Like, it's... Maybe when you watch, if you do end up watching it, like, you'd remember it. But I just remember being, like you said, like a very core part of the curriculum, and a lot of people watched it at, like, actually in school, you know, like, as it's coming up to the holidays or something.
Right.
And it was always on TV.
Incredible.
It's a bit of a staple of the English childhood, I think. Goodnight, Mr. Tom.
For sure. Oh, I love that. I love that, man. That's excellent. Nice. Oh, you've blown fucking Chronicles of Narnia out of the water.
I don't know.
Oh, that's excellent. Oh, excellent, excellent. Cool. Well, and I'll end it with, fun fact, Phoenix Cinema was around during the Blitz. How incredible is that?
Wow. Very cool.
I mean, it was built in 1910, 1912. And so this establishment was still there. It was called the Rex back then.
Was it hit by the Blitz at all? Like,
not that I could see. I was very interested. Not that I could see. It's definitely had its periods of like refurbishment and renovations and changing hands, but yeah, I tried doing my research and I couldn't see anything about that. But
because I remember when living in London, especially near where I worked as well, you could still see like shrapnel marks on the wall from where this damage was done during the war. And it's, you can see it as you go around London. You know, you have to look for it, but there are still there are still remnants of, you know, this Nazi bombing campaign.
Oof.
Really interesting.
Amazing. It really is, yeah.
And like, you said, like not even that long ago, that's what I think is the most amazing thing, because it seems so alien and so out of the movies, but it's less than 100 years ago.
Yes. Yes. And this is what I, so, you know, when I put, I'm trying to put myself in their shoes and think, this was, my God, this was, you know, by happenstance, should I have been born 30, 40 years earlier, I would have had to go through this shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane to me. Yeah, absolutely insane. Oh, you know what's just entered my head? One of my favorite moments in this movie. Sorry, this episode is going on, but you know, it's but it was so McQueen clearly loves music, and there's a couple of scenes in here in which he gets to indulge his love for music and performance by just letting his performers sing and dance. It's a nice link to his Lover's Rock segment of his Small Axe series. Do you ever see that? Really interesting, because the series is called Small Axe. It was made for BBC. There's about five episodes, each of feature film length episodes of different moments of sort of black culture throughout British history. Cool. Really cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's this moment where there's this full on like swing party happening, and then everybody just stops, and they just stop and they look up. And it's silent. And I'm like, what are they hearing? And then you just see in silence a bomber plane flying, and you see blasts from a distance lighting up the plane, so you know who it is, and then cut to black. And then the next shot, it's George, who's fallen in with this gang, picking over the bodies of the people in this club. That transition was so incredibly powerful, how there's just music and joy and life, and then there's just a dead stop in three shots.
That was Celeste, I think, as well, the singer.
I think, know what? I was thinking the same thing.
We were talking about her yesterday as well.
You know what? Yeah, I've told you, these connections are happening in my life. I thought for myself, play the lottery. That hasn't worked. So what is the point of all this? I don't know. But anyway, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much, sir.
It's been a blast. Lots of fun. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I'll see you on the next one.
Absolutely.
Special thanks to Phoenix Cinema. Our music is by Stefan Krieger, and our episodes are edited by Noah Anderson. Again, as mentioned last episode, Phoenix Cinema is closed until the 17th, 18th of December, while refurbishments take place, and they will reopen with the introduction of a second screen, which is super exciting. Stay tuned for more updates on that, and we look forward to whatever the venue programs next for the upcoming festive season. If you like this podcast, please share it, please like it, please rate it and subscribe it. It helps us massively. On your way to watching a movie at the Phoenix Cinema. I'll see you in mid-December.